You're now diving into the fish tank.
Sitting down with Seth Living, Seth. OJ, Juice Man, ooh, and this is strictly for them true fans, yeah. Dog fans, number one. One, of course y'all, this ain't no ordinary sports talk, dive up in that fish tank.
Welcome back to the Fish Tank right here on the Miami Dolphins Podcast Network. Seth Levitt, DJ Precian, of course, the great OJ McDuffie. Juice, how you feeling today?
What's up, Big Seth?
Man, you know, we had to change it up a little bit. I think Vanessa put the call in to Leon and said we got to switch it up for these guys. You know, get them back in the Fish Tank studios, even though we can't be in front of each other.
Right.
Juice, it's been a good run. We've had a couple of good players on here, some quarterbacks, some guys who put the rock in your hand from time to time. But some of these best stories have come from the guys who are storytellers for a living. And what better way to keep that rolling than to bring in an award-winning columnist.
Say that again.
Award-winning, like lots of awards.
There we go.
Lots of awards. Dave Hyde, welcome to the tank.
And I like that introduction, guys, but the bar, you're setting the bar a little high. The secret of life is low expectations, okay?
You got to put the pressure on you when you're in the tank.
That's right. That's right.
On, Dave. Hey, we're going to get into a lot of fun here today, Dave. But, you know, we do some research. As you know, we did a little pre-interview with you. And I jumped on Google and I typed in Dave Hyde and, you know, your Wikipedia page came up. But there's a picture. Have you seen your Wikipedia page? There's a picture associated with your bio. I want to know who this guy is.
I mean, he's looking a little young. Is that the issue?
Who is this guy over here in the corner carrying the orange crush all the way on the left-hand side there? He's I don't think that's you. Is that your dad?
That I don't know who. Oh, that is my dad. Yeah. he's wearing Syracuse. I've never seen that picture before, but
anybody who's looked for you on Wikipedia has seen that picture because that's what comes up.
My dad played lacrosse at Syracuse right after Jim Brown, and so he's always. I don't know what that garb is, but somehow that's. I don't know the story behind that. I'm gonna have to ask him what that is.
I want to know. Is he? Are you like a junior or the third? Is he also a Dave Hyde? Why does
he is not? He is not. Thank God, because his name was Warren. and they did not saddle me with that, thank goodness. Warren Ralph make it even worse.
Yeah, Warren Ralph. Well, you may want to, I don't know who adjusts your Wikipedia bio, but, or maybe that's good. Maybe it's good, like a witness protection situation.
I'm gonna have to tell him. He'll get a kick out of it.
Yeah,
he'll
right?
It. He'll love it. Maybe he put it there.
Well, I know he didn't put it there because his technology, he doesn't even know what Wikipedia is.
Okay.
Hey, well, you know, Dave, you know, not to age either one of us, as you can tell by my grades, how old, you know, I am, you know, but you've been covering South Florida sports for a long time, definitely since I got down here in 93. Tell us a little bit about your background and where you're from, you know, how you ended up as, you know, one of the most prominent columnists down here in our community, buddy.
All righty. So I went to school at Miami of Ohio. I grew up in outside Ohio, in outside of Columbus in Westerville.
You knew and, he knew you were in Ohio.
You know I knew that much.
Yeah, I knew that. I knew.
Donna Carter's from Westerville.
Donna Carter's from Westerville. Wow. Yeah. Trust me, I followed Kajana's career at Penn State and all that because he was from Westerville. And so after school, I got an interview with the Rochester, New York paper. And I went to the Rochester, New York paper, and they sent me out on a trial, you know, a test. Go cover a high school softball game. Came back, and I wrote up a story. And I thought, wow, this is pretty good for, you know, a quick run here, not knowing anything about this area. And the sports editor called me into his office and said, well, it was written pretty good, but you misspelled the name of the star player throughout the story. So that's how I started my career in Iowa City, Iowa, and not Rochester. So I was in Iowa City for a year, sent out resumes all over, got a call from the Miami Herald, and it was sunny and beautiful when I came down here, unlike Iowa. And so I started here in 85. So I preceded you, your gray hairs, by several years, OJ. I was at the Herald for 5 years. I was covering the Earthquake World Series and got a call from the Sun Sentinel that they wanted to hire me as a columnist. And so literally it took an act of God for me to get that Sun Sentinel job.
Well, why is that? Oh, the act of God.
The earthquake. The earthquake.
Come on, Seth.
Keep up with my bad jokes. These are like my Rotary Club jokes right here.
You know, South Florida, Rochester. Seth, did you ever know the Harvey Green Rochester joke? Did he ever tell you that one?
No.
He said, why did God make Rochester? So people from Buffalo had something to make fun of.
How would he say it? Harvey? That's Harvey, yeah. Right?
That was a ride on a bus ride.
I'll tell you what he told this poor 9-year-old kid in the elevator at a Buffalo game. It was horrible. So you were at the Herald and you were covering. You were covering not the Dolphins.
I came in and they don't have the section anymore. It's called Neighbors. You cover neighborhood sports. So actually, I cover like the T-ball team that won the championship. And funny story, I covered, I guess, Dan Levitard's, he was on a travel baseball team. And so he always jokes with me about covering.
Did you like write this horrible story and he said that I'm going to write this wrong?
I'd like to think I inspired him to greatness, but bringing out the magic of whatever team he was on.
Were you fair on Dan? I mean,
He was on a travel team, so
he was hitting off a tee.
I don't know what that means, but it means he was better than not being on the travel team.
Well, unless dad or something was the coach,
or they had
some money behind it.
It'd be great to go back in the Wayback Machine and interview him and see what he has to say about himself.
That would be classic if you could pull that off. So how do you go from covering T-ball to getting a columnist gig with the Sentinel? Like, I mean, clearly the joke went over my head. But I also can't comprehend that transition.
Yeah, well, so the Herald back then, it was like the minor leagues, okay? They had 6-7 young people like me who with hopefully some talent and ambition, and you see what develops, and you, like any other job profession, you rise up through the ranks. So I went from there to covering the University of Florida for a couple years, Galen Hall, Kerwin Bell years. Then I started writing the sports TV column back when they had such things, TV
so you
and radio.
Were you the first Barry Jackson?
I was. I preceded Barry as Barry. I ripped Joe. Joe got really mad at me once, I remember. And
I love it.
That all led to me becoming a sports columnist.
And so at that point, then it's everything. You're covering Dolphins. I say everything. there weren't as many teams to cover, but
right.
Was it heavy Dolphins and Hurricanes?
Yeah. You know, when I got down here, the UM baseball team in the spring was the biggest story in the world. And I'd never seen that before, you know, college baseball being big, but obviously Ron Frazier and they were always going to the College World Series, it seems, and winning. And there wasn't anything else going on. And it's sort of like 24-hour news today. Well, you got to fill it with something. And we filled it with that. But the great thing of my timing to South Florida was just as I got here and got into a position where I could write about a lot of things. There were actually a lot of things to write about. The Heat came. The Marlins and Panthers came the same 12-month period. And all of a sudden, we went from a nice AAA city. And that's really when I took the columnist job at the Sun Sentinel. That's what I was told. This is a great AAA city for a writer. It has some stuff, but you want to get to a Chicago or New York. Well, by the time I actually figured out what the heck I was doing writing a column, we had everything. From that standpoint, it's been a great, incredible market to be a sports writer.
Good stuff. And so you mentioned the Hurricanes. And how much did you... And I am going somewhere with this, but how, you know, as a young reporter going from Dan Levitard playing T-ball to, did you cover any of the, I mean, the Hurricanes at that time, if I think of especially the Jimmy Johnson teams and that transition to the Erickson teams and the guys that played on those teams, and you talk about brash and bold, did you cover any of those guys? Did you do any stories on those guys? And was that intimidating for a young reporter who was spelling names wrong in Iowa? Or
no, it was incredible because, in Iowa City, and OJ's in the Big Ten. He knows what it was like and how regimented it was. Okay, I covered Hayden Fry in Iowa. And every Tuesday, Hayden would have a press conference for 20 minutes. Then you could talk to whatever player showed up for 20 minutes. That was your whole access for the whole week. Okay, and from a sports writing standpoint, a storytelling standpoint, you want to try to get to know players, try to you know, talk to them, bump into them as much as possible. So I go from that very regimented, closed down outfit, which the whole Big Ten was. I go from that, my first day at Coral Gables, Paul Anger, sports editor of the Miami Herald, said, hey, go down to Coral Gables. We got a story for you to do at UM. So I go, okay. So I go in the press room, small press room, and all of a sudden I realize I'm the only one there. Everybody's left somewhere. And the PR guy comes in. He goes, hey, aren't you going to go to practice? And I go, oh, we're allowed to go to practice? And he goes, yeah. So I walk out to practice, and I'm standing there, you know, here, first day, probably my first 2 weeks in South Florida. And Jimmy Johnson walks over, shakes my hand, stands next to me, and talks to me for 10 minutes. And I'm thinking, this is a whole new world, you know. And this one, UM, is at the height of power in college. You know, Jimmy's got it going. And so that told me, you know, there's no reason that all these teams, there's no benefit to locking down other than the coach wants to control everything. And it also told you how Jimmy, you know, I loved how Jimmy ran the programs down here. And I loved covering Jimmy and you know, Michael Irvin. Look, I remember meeting at a practice, a guy was disciplined from University of Miami, as one of his teammates, and he had to run laps. And who's out there running them with him? Michael Irvin, just because he's a good teammate, just running for half hour, 40 minutes, just because he's a teammate of the guy. So you really saw a lot of things why that team was as great as it was from how they felt about each other.
Oh, that's pretty awesome, man. Mike Irvin's one of my favorite guys, man. Obviously never played with him, played against him a couple of times, man, but just interaction off the field, man, it's been all positive with that guy, man. Yeah, what a story he has now, right? You know?
Oof. When he was inducted into the Broward County Hall of Fame, I called him up and said, hey, you're going to be here. Can I go to your neighborhood with you, back to your old neighbor? He goes, okay. So we go back to his neighborhood, and we're walking the street, and he's looking, getting down, looking close at the street on the, he goes, it must have rubbed off. Oh, here's, you see a little paint flex on the street. He painted strips every 100 yards. And after practice, he would come home and he'd run sprints. Wow. Around the neighborhood, and he'd mark, you know, how far they were. So, you know, stories like that tell why a Michael Irvin got to the heights that he did.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, another thing we have in common besides, you know, being great Ohioans, you know, is, you know, as young guys, we had to interact with a legend in Coach Don Shula. I know you had to have some memorable moments and times with Coach and some experience, man. Can you tell us about a little bit of that?
Yeah, well, the one that comes to mind is probably one of the more recent ones, which I went out with him and Bob Greasy to Gulfstream Racetrack and sat for an hour and listened to Coach's awful jokes. You know, the funny thing is he got older, he actually lightened up and he let you in, and he had a sense of humor. You saw it a lot more when he had the full pressure on him of, but, yeah, my first – with Coach Shula, you knew if you wrote something he didn't like, he would hear about it. He had – confrontation was in his toolbox. You know, that was a great tool he had. And I don't mean that in a bad way, because everybody says, oh, tell a story of Coach Shula blowing up at you. Well, here's the story. I went out there one day, and back then, again, with access after lunch in the media – the cafeteria, back to players' aid – mediate in the same room. There's a media table. Coach Shula would walk over and sit down at the media table. You'd ask him questions. So I asked a question, and he goes, after the crap you wrote, you're asking that? And I was like,
didn't say crap, Juice. That's
just, yeah, so, but I don't know where we are on the rating scale here.
Let it fly, man. Let it fly.
Okay. So after the shit, that horse shit column you wrote, and I was like, and I said, what are you talking about? And he goes, you don't even remember what you wrote? And I said, yeah, Coach, but I wrote two columns this week. I'm not sure which one you're talking about. That actually got a little chuckle out of him. And the point being, if you gave some, you know, you couldn't just take it with him. If you gave something back a little, he appreciated that. And at the same time, sometimes you just had to let the thunderstorm roll over you. But he was very good. Once he said what he had to say, he was done with it. He didn't carry grudges. He didn't carry remind you the next time of it. He got it out. And I think talking with players, he's the same way.
You know, it's funny, Juice, as Dave's telling that story, I think back to what William Judson told us about how, you know, we had William in the tank, and he talked about how where he grew up and the communities he grew up in, the first white coach he ever had was Don Shula, which is right. Fascinating. but everything was yes, sir, yes, sir, yes, sir. And he said he got to Miami and Shula dog cusses Mike Kozlowski and Mike Kozlowski dog cusses him right back. And then he said he started to realize the guys that were cursing back at him, he was kind of easier on. And so when you say that, it's like, you know, you gave it back to him a little bit. And so maybe it was just a little temperature check. It was a heat check.
The funny thing, okay, so he respected those type of people in his life who gave back. So he's dating Dorothy. You know, this is in the 50s, late 50s, dating Dorothy. And it was the time in the relationship where you're either going to get married or not, and it was up to Don. And
they call it shit or get off the pot, right?
We've all been there, right? Shit or get off the pot. And Don's hemming and hawing. Dorothy takes a job in Hawaii teaching. She's a teacher. She takes a job in Hawaii, and she goes to Hawaii. And you talk about giving – he respected people who pushed back against him. So she said, okay, if you're not – I'm getting out of here. I'm not hanging around for you. And from there, he ended up writing a letter to her and proposed to her by letter. The funny part about that, the first page of the letter is about his coaching, and the second page he proposed.
Quite the romantic here. I love it. Good work, Coach. I told you we brought the storytellers in here. So actually, that brings me to a point, Dave, and I want to ask the question. The listeners probably don't give a shit, but the transition from, and I guess from T-ball to columnist is probably different, but to being kind of if you're a beat reporter, it's a whole different style of writing than the columnist. And so like when you tell that story or whatever the stories were that Coach was unhappy about, and I don't know if you ever figured out which one of the two it was, just talk about the difference in the approach. And, you know, when you cover the Dolphins or any of the teams in South Florida, but the one we care about here is the Dolphins, it's just when you walk into a locker room or when you go to a game even, and what the story you're going to tell all the folks who are going to read that is very different than what somebody has to tell that has to cover every kick and every play and what call were made, you know, was made. And how different is that approach? And I'm assuming you clearly like the columnist side better, since that's where you've, you know, buttered your bread over the.
Yeah, no, you know, to me, right. I always wanted to be a columnist because growing up, they're the ones I read. You got complete freedom as a writer. If I want to write about one play, I can write about one play. If I want to criticize or praise, I can do that. But, you know, so when there's sort of two components to your question, because the media, my business has changed completely. Yeah. And from when I started, which was initially, there were molds for a beat writer. You'd write about the game. You'd write about on fourth and or third and three, they ran this play for a first down or a touchdown or whatever. Give the facts. And the column would be the opinion or the emotion or whatever. Now it's changed. There's really not nearly, there are beat writers, the guys who go out every day, but they're giving opinions as left and right, as much as I am a lot of times. And so, you know, for better and worse, the way I look at it, but it's certainly a big change in the business.
Yeah. You know, with that in mind, I mean, it's obviously, you know, you can go different places with your storytelling, like you talked about. You know, you can take one play and make a whole column out of it, whatever you want to do. And it's different than just going out there and talking about who's starting, you know, who's on the trading block and things like that. But there had to be some interesting people you've covered over the years, I'm sure. And one of them I know, and we had him in the tank, if I'm mistaken, Ricky Williams. And I know you had an experience with Ricky Williams that you know, you probably haven't had with any other player you've ever covered in your career.
Yeah, Ricky was fun because as I got to know him, you know, and it took a while to really his – you know, there was a first chapter here. I really didn't know him and I didn't understand them. And then after a suspension, for whatever reason, I got to know him pretty well. And he was open to talking to me. And we had some just really fascinating interviews, more because of him, because of who he is. And he allowed me to see. And so one day I was talking to him, you know, he'd taken classes to get his degree and he went and took a yoga class out in California. So I asked him, "Oh, what are you doing this summer?" And he goes, "Oh, I'm going to study massage therapy." And I go, "Oh," so we started talking about that. And I go, "Maybe I'll give you a call when you're doing it and come out and do a column." But I'm, you know, look, hey, I'm always trolling the waters for something to write about, you know. And he said, "Sure." So the time came, and he said, "Why don't you come out to the school and?" So I went out, and it was a South Miami, a strip mall school. And I remember going up there, and he had on his white, you know, looking like a doctor almost. And he said, "So what do you want to do?" And I go, "I want you to give me a massage." That's what I wanted. He goes, okay. You know, because that was right up his alley. He ain't going to say, how's this going to look or anything. He didn't care. He
right.
So thank God it was a Japanese shiatsu massage where you keep your clothes on. Okay. But it was still, we're starting the internet world. And I got a lot of, oh my God, you got a massage from Ricky Williams. But it was a great column. It was a fun column. And it was all Ricky that he allowed himself to be seen. And that, you know, he said, yeah, sure. I don't have anything to.
Now, was there a photographer there, Dave? Do we have
any? Photographer was there. Videographer was there. Yep. And I'm sure if you can find a picture of my dad on my Wikipedia page.
That wasn't very hard.
Yeah, that's a little weird one. But I'm sure you can find, I haven't seen it recently, but I'm sure it was a bit.
I would like to appeal to the Google gods that the picture of Ricky giving you a massage should replace the picture of your father.
Soda. Yeah, we're going to see the power of the tank right now. Yeah.
All right. I'm going to start making some moves here.
And Dave, you know what? Piggybacking on what you talked about with Ricky, you know, we heard a different Ricky when we had him on the podcast. What, you know, I think a lot of people maybe be, I guess, misinformed or didn't understand Ricky. What was your relationship like with him other than the massage, obviously?
Well, the first stretch with him, I really didn't understand him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he, in a good way, he was completely different than anybody I'd ever covered, okay? And he had thoughts and he had ideas and it was really fascinating. So the second time when I got to know him a little, it was really interesting to talk to him. And, you know, he's one of those guys who, you know, I guess he had an agent, but Bill Parcells one day walked by his locker and put a yellow stick it notice. It said 4.5. And that was the negotiation for his contract right there. Okay. Yeah,
this is a violation, by the way. Yeah, he shouldn't have done that.
So Ricky, so, you know, you talk about interesting guys to cover and why I like this business is, you know, meeting guys like that and you know, getting to know them somewhat. But he also told me recently in his new life as a marijuana, I don't know, spokesman, businessman, entrepreneur, he's making all the money he got suspended and fined for. He's making it back on top.
That's only right.
All life's a circle, right?
That is funny. Yeah, it's interesting though. You know what you say that, not to get stuck on this point here, Dave. But when you said you didn't understand him at first, and we talked to Ricky about, you know, he really was ahead of his time, and that individual that you struggled to understand initially. I don't want to say there are a lot of Ricky Williams now in our league, but this is a league that I think is built to accept that individuality far more than the league was at that time. And so I think a byproduct of that were the individuals who were covering the league.
Yeah, I think you're right. And part of that is, you know, from my standpoint, just, okay, you're meeting guys and thankfully you're meeting guys who just aren't cookie cutter, or they in interviews they don't, you know, just repeat what the coach says or something. Now football's hard for that because, you know, the average career is 3 years, and you know, you meet Ricky by the end of his run here was in his early 30s, I believe, and you know, he'd grown up, you know, outlasted a lot. He'd seen a lot. He knew what he wanted to say, and he was, you know. Me at 31 or 32 is a different person talking than me at 20.
No doubt.
Okay. And I think that's what a lot of times we forget in this business is a lot of these times guys at 21 just don't have a lot to say. You know,
yeah.
I mean, they're as I didn't either.
Or just their worldview is just so much more narrow. You know, they might have a lot to say, but it doesn't come from experience. So, well, speaking of people who are interesting characters and going places with your stories, you know, somewhere along the way, you became the expert journalist on the 72 team, which is interesting because you didn't cover them, right? And, you know, obviously, like, you know, when the late, great Edwin Pope was here, he saw it, lived it, ran with it. But you have done a lot to chronicle those stories. You've written books and, you know, even the stories shared with us earlier with Coach Shula and his romantic proposal. But there was one individual on that team that's a little harder to get in touch with than the rest of those guys. And that is the great Jake Scott. So I remember that And I don't know if you wrote a story about this or you just told me this, but that whole journey of getting Jake for the book was quite an experience.
Yeah. Now, I didn't get him for the book. That was the experience. Okay. He was the one guy. He was the one guy I couldn't get. You know, and when you can't get something, you're like, I'm thinking, that's starting to burn me that I couldn't find him. I couldn't get. I remember going to Jim Mandich, and Jim was the greatest. You know, he was a great, you know, great on the football side. He was great on the media side, and he was just great to deal with because he would tell you the truth in a fascinating way. And I go, Jim, I know you're friends with Jake. Can't you just, you know, call him up and give me a chance to talk to him? And he goes, Howard Cosell. And he went through this list of five big media titans. He goes, they've all come to me the same. And I no can't do it. And so what happened was I went to my editor after I wrote a book on the 72 Dolphins called Still Perfect. And so I said, hey, if you ever have any extra money, send me to Hawaii and I'll go try to do a story on Jake Scott. But here's the catch. I can't promise he's going to talk to me. In fact, there's a good chance he might not talk to me. Okay.
You go to Hawaii without possibly doing an interview.
I thought it was the greatest scam in the world. Yeah, you know,
I'm surprised that he went for it.
Especially if he bit.
Well, it took about 4 years, you know. Then one day, I'd forgotten all about it, you know. A couple of years afterwards, he'd go, you have any good story ideas? And I said, Jake Scott in Hawaii. Of course, I'm thinking, you know, a few days in Hawaii. If I get him, great. If not, I'm in Hawaii.
A few days in Hawaii, sure.
So he came to me and goes, hey, why don't you go out and try to get a hold of Jake Scott?
Wow.
So Jake's, to tell what it's like, so I go out, and he's on the last island. He's in Kauai. Okay, I knew I had his address, and I actually had to call his mom, who lived in Georgia, because I wanted to make sure he was there if I'm going out there. And so I was hemming and hawing. I didn't want to say I'm going out there to alert him, but I did find out he was in Hawaii at the time. And so I drove by his house. It's right across from the ocean. Beautiful. If you've been to Kauai, it's just a beautiful Hanalei Bay, the last town on the last island. In the last state before that you could drop into the Pacific Ocean. And
sounds like it doesn't suck, Juice.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't.
But Jake, now you got to understand Jake's personality. He was in a bar in Colorado once and a guy came up and pushed him and said, hey, I hear you're a football player. And he goes, well, I'm the toughest guy in here. I just want to show you how. So the guy's picking a fight and, it was a downstairs bar, and they walk upstairs. And as they're walking upstairs to go outside, Jake says, well, what are the rules of the fight? And the guy said, there are no rules. And so Jake opens the door to go outside, and he turns. As the guy's coming up the stairs, bam, pops him. The guy goes tumbling down the stairs. And Jake walks over him and goes, there's nobody tougher in here than you. And so there's 100 stories like that of Jake. They would not –
What the rules of the fight were.
Right.
Right. No rules. Anything good. The Dolphin veterans his first year they didn't even try to make him sick.
Right.
Because they just stayed away from him. He was one of those guys that he had a look in his eye that said, so I'm hearing all these stories resonating in my head as I'm going to his house unannounced. And there's a guy outside, and this is in the lead of the story, but there's a guy in his truck, an SUV outside his house, and I, you know, reaching in something. I go, hey, Jake. And he comes out and he goes, no, Jake's up in the house. He goes, who are you? And I said, I'm a writer from Florida. And he goes, hey, Jake, there's a writer from Florida here to see you. And that vision of him turning and punching the guy and rolling down the stairs goes through my head. But I knock on the door. He comes out, he's the nicest guy. We talk for 10 minutes and, he says, you know, every day I'm at this bar at 5 o'clock. If you want to come in, we'll have a drink. Now, the bar, if you've seen the movie Descendants with George Clooney, these three seats that him and these two other guys sat in every day at 5 o'clock are prominently featured in that movie where I'm drawing a blank on the main character besides Clooney, Jeff Bridges, I believe, or Beau Bridges. Sitting in that seat, and the same two guys who sit next to Jake are in the movie. So we sat there from 5 o'clock till 1 in the morning, and talked and talked and told all the stories, great stories about, you know, he didn't get along with Shula, why he didn't, but just, you know, it was just a great, you know, when I'm thinking of back in my career, that was probably the most fun story to do.
What was his reaction? Like, you came all the way the hell out of here. Like, what if I didn't answer the door? Did he even react to that? Or did he just, hey, come on, meet me at the bar? And
his reaction was, I knew you were coming. And I said, you knew I was coming. He goes, and the other story with Jake, and one of the things is all his teammates say he never lies. He won't lie about anything. Like, you better get ready for the furnace blast because there's no filter on him. And so and so he's going to tell you what he thinks. And, you know, I guess somehow his mom must have called, tipped him off, and he called, says, knew someone at the airlines. And, so I don't know. But, you know, he couldn't have been nicer. And it was really, you know, we're walking around the island the next day. I remember I saw Pierce Brosnan, the actor who has a house out there. James Bond. And so
James Bond, if you ask me, but that's
but yeah, no, it was a wild experience.
Adam, that's great, man. You know, speaking of, you know, obviously Seth talked about going places, but you've covered being in Iowa and Hayden Fry, those cats were a little different than the guys you saw at UM, I'm sure, right? I mean, you talk about how the Big Ten, how regimented and everything it was. But you also had to run into some guys in the Dolphin locker room. And you talk about how nobody messed with Jake Scott, right? Well, one guy in the Dolphins, you know, is the first guy to haze me. A guy by the name of Brian Cox. I know you know about B. Cox a little bit. You know?
Oh, yeah.
He wasn't
yeah.
afraid of me at all. So
he wasn't afraid but of me either.
Yeah, I heard you got on his bad side at one point.
Yeah, one time, so we're talking, you know, early 90s, 92, 93, something like that. And you guys had just lost, you know, it was the year after the San Diego playoff loss. Bad loss. You're up like 21-3 at half. And I'm only telling this because it plays into the why you got upset.
Appreciate it, Dave. Appreciate it.
And so the next year you open
against. Well, Colin is not beat writer on this.
Yeah, no, you open against the Colts and you have a lead at half and you end up losing that game. So I wrote a column, you know, with a great, great, beautiful tone, I'm sure, saying, oh, nothing's changed. You know, bad loss to end one season, bad loss to, and I come out the next day and Harvey Green, the PR guy, comes up to me and he goes, hey, can you not go in the locker? And I'm like,
shocking.
I said, what? And he goes, yeah, you might not want to go in the locker. And I was like, you know, he's trying to do his job and warn me and head off a confrontation. So I go, well, Harvey, you know, I have to go in the locker. So I walk in the locker and there on the whiteboard, you know, the grease board, and here, I don't know where we are on this podcast.
Just go for it. We can edit it out later. Leon's
As a reporter, I'll just quote what I saw, which was Dave Hyde sucked. And I'm like,
that might be a free pick first.
And I walk in and as if I couldn't read that and everybody else couldn't read that, he yells it from across the locker room. So I'm thinking,
he quoted himself. He made sure that.
Yeah, he made sure. Right.
It wasn't anonymous. It wasn't anonymous.
Yeah, he wanted to be off for the writing.
Yeah, I think he did sign it too, to be honest with you. I'm pretty sure it was signed.
Was it COX? Did he put COX?
Yeah. And of course, so I walk over at him and he's yelling at me and da da da. And I have to admit, I really didn't understand why he was upset. Again,
Dave, you didn't know why, right?
Right. But this time I really didn't, because I'm thinking, you know, I didn't rip him. You know, I'm thinking, what did I write? Okay, I didn't rip. I don't even remember mentioning Brian Cox. And he was upset because he said they were, and he's right, they were two completely different losses. One game they got out-physicaled. The other game they got out-finessed. And how dare I compare one to the other? But anyways, and like anything else, you go up and you talk to him. He calms down. I'm like a little nervous in the light. You know, it's not a good situation to be in. Part of you is going to humming a humming a humming a humming a, you know, just hoping that you don't stumble over words. But, you know, it's a healthy thing to do. That's part of covering. You go, if you write something, you have to go out there the next day and face the music. That's the way I was raised in the business. And, but, fast forward, Brian Cox is an assistant again of the Dolphins for a brief period there with Parcells, I believe, and went out and talked to him. And, you know, like anything else, you grow up, everybody moves on. It's not a big deal. But that day, it was a very uncomfortable deal. Yeah.
To say the least.
So I'm glad, OJ, that you got the business too. It wasn't.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Boy, did I.
I feel like everybody did, right? Whole sidelines in Cincinnati, and you know, the Brian's wrath was felt in a lot of places. But so that story is fascinating for a lot of reasons. I love that he wrote it and then had to say it again. But as you said, you know, one of the things is from the PR guy's perspective. When guys rip people or write something that they know is going to be inflammatory and cause a shitstorm in the locker room, and then they don't show up the next day, there's nothing that, you know, you see Juice nodding his head. Nothing bothers PR guys, coaches, players more than that. That, you know, hey, if we go have a horrible game, we have to then go into the locker room and have a bullshit 10-minute cool-off period and then face the music with you guys. And if we leave, we get fined. But you guys can write whatever you want, and if you don't show up the next day. So I know that that's a big deal to players. And so it's fascinating that Harvey was like, you might not want to come in. You know? Because well, normally, you know, like, hey, where are you? You know, you wrote this. You better show up today. But maybe this was one, and because it was Brian.
You know, another one was Jimmy Johnson when he was here. Jimmy was, to me, the most fascinating coach, you know, up with Ricky, different parameters here, but as a coach, he was the most fascinating because you never knew what angle he's going to come from, and he was different with the Dolphins and with UM because the great success he had at UM, and he was younger and probably brasher, and that's maybe it's also when I got to know him first. But I love covering Jimmy, but remember to the end of his reign, him and Dan Marino were clashing, and he came out, and so I wrote a column saying, okay, Marino's not perfect at this point in his career, but neither is Jimmy, and I wrote all these lists of mistakes Jimmy had made. And one of them, to my, you know, you regret things in this business sometimes, and it was a throwaway line, okay? It was like, it was on the jump. Second page, you got to turn the page. And it was, and he's got a little dog.
You went after Buttercup?
and unfortunately, the editor put a picture of Buttercup in there. And I'm a dog person, and I love dogs. But I go out there the next day, and because you know, as much as you can, as long as you got to face music. And the question, you know, media huddles around Jimmy, and the question was something like, hey, coach, do you have a good practice? Something innocuous, you know? And he goes, well, I guess you all read that I wasn't perfect today. He goes, what to rip a little dog, you know? And he was right. I was like, I felt awful.
Wait a minute. He was in his feelings about the dog. He didn't care.
Yeah. No, he's like, rip me all you want, but rip my dog. Come on, man.
He loved that dog. Love it. Buttercup Island. They put an island in the pool for that little dog.
Did we lose Juice? Is Juice frozen on this thing?
I think he might be.
Yeah, I think he might be. Yeah.
I thought it was just some anti-Jimmy sentiment, but
now Jimmy to me is a great. Even nobody does retirement better than Jimmy. No football coach I know has done retirement, enjoyed life. You know, down in the Keys, got his big paradise place down there, and you know he's really a fascinating person.
Did you write the story? I think the last hurricane, his place, and that place was stunningly gorgeous. I mean, he threw an amazing party that Tony Eguist chronicles. So we had the fortune of being there. But I know that place got flattened. And were you the one who wrote that piece?
Yeah, I went down. So he was out in L.A. doing TV work with Fox. And he flew in on, a Wednesday night. And I met him Thursday morning. And his place was devastated. It was, you know, the docks were destroyed. An ice machine that had been on the docks was, you know, 300 feet up the driveway. There was sand all around his house. You know, and again, that's sort of he's built it in his image of how he thought paradise, and to see it in that shape was, but, you know, he got it back. It's all like the rest of the Keys, it's all built back again.
Of course.
Well, I remember, I remember one of the lines that I thought was really profound in there, and I give Coach credit for that. Was that, you know, he was devastated, but he also realized that he had the means to start over. Yeah, a lot of folks didn't know what they were going to be able to do because they, that was everything they had was put in those places.
But it is interesting from a writing standpoint. He sort of, to me, became a voice of the Keys. Mm. You know, look, we're in pain. We got hit. But as you said, Jimmy said, don't feel sorry for me. Feel sorry for, you know, try to help these other people. I got the money to put them back together. And a lot of people down here don't.
Yeah. Hey, Dave, and I'm going off script here a little bit, but how do you reach out to a guy who just suffered that kind of loss and say, hey, can I come down and tell this story? And granted, I imagine your pre-existing relationship with Jimmy helped be able to make that call. But that's got to be a tough ask.
Yeah, a lot of, like any other business, sales, teaching, anything, it's about relationships. And I'd known Jimmy by that point for years and years, and I got to know him better in retirement than I did in, so I didn't.
It's going to be a theme, by the way.
The other thing is this job gives you license to ask questions you would never ask people, and for better and for worse. And better, the worse is sometimes they don't want to be asked the questions, okay? And somebody's died and you're asking questions. Now, for better in that, a lot of times people are very gratified to ask, their father's died or something, and they want to talk about him. They want to tell people about him, and they appreciate that his life is going to be celebrated in a different, whether newspaper or somewhere in the media. So, for better or worse, you get a license to ask questions. And I've had people hang up on me because at the same time, I've had people say, hey, I really appreciate you calling. So you don't know how people are going to react to a death or a tragedy or something, or their house getting destroyed. And you just ask.
Yeah, just don't fuck with a man's dog,
Bottom line.
That's what it comes down to. So we had Armando on, and right, Juice? I mean, one of the great stories ever told in the Fish Tank where he lit up Jason Cole and Armando in the Players Lounge and had the article, the whole thing. So I wonder if you were headed for that, and then you got to the Buttercup piece, and then he didn't even care what you said about him. That's unbelievable.
Everybody says wants to know the great blow-ups you've had with the media. And here I've been in 30-something years, and there's only a handful of them. I mean, it's not like it's one of the great things is most of the guys are really professional. That you come across. Okay.
You are too, Dave. And I'm not just saying this. That's your approach, man.
The unfortunate thing about covering the Dolphins the last X number of years, you're meeting guys when the elevator is going down in their careers, and I always be fascinated to meet somebody like Jimmy. I met him when the elevator is going up, up to the top, and it's a lot more fun meeting guys that way than it is when you walk out and you have to write about,
I think you got a guy in the big office there now over at 7500 Southwest 30th.
Let's hope so. It's a lot more covering a winner.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Well, I got to talk about this one guy. I heard about the story. I know I'm saying it because Big Seth falls apart every time I talk about this guy.
Oh,
but
I know what you're doing.
Every time his name comes up, Seth falls apart. Bill Parcells. I know you once wrote a piece that was complimentary of Bill Parcells, but it had, unintentionally had a lasting effect that, maybe you didn't expect. Dave, tell me about your relationship with Bill in this piece.
Well, by the end, I really didn't have a good, I had a non-relationship with Bill, but for a while.
You have a relationship with anybody like that? Or did he have one guy, right?
What's that?
Did he have a personal relationship with anybody?
Did he? He kind of snuck out the side door on everybody, which is something that is very weird to me. I hadn't seen that before in sports. I've always wondered what's the best way to exit, because Ricky didn't do it right. He exited to a tent in Australia. And
he came back.
He came back, but he exited. But Parcells did it right, I guess, because he quietly went out the back door and nobody noticed. To the point of this, I'd heard he'd befriended a homeless guy. Okay, he drove from the Fort Lauderdale beaches on his way in up 17th Street Causeway at US-1 there. He somehow struck up a relationship with a guy who was, of all things, selling Sun Sentinel newspapers. But he was homeless, standing on the corner hawking newspapers. And really? I thought, well, that's weird. And so, you know, you're always looking for offbeat stuff in my business. And I'm going to go try to find that guy. So I'd get up at 5 a.m. for 4 or 5 days. And I'd try to find this man. And finally, I got him. And we went over to like a McDonald's and we had breakfast. And I talked to him. And he's telling about, yeah, Parcells will drive up in his car. And he'll buy a paper. And we started, if it's a red light, we'll talk about football for the amount of the red light. Then he'll go. And over that, they struck up a friendship. Okay. And Parcells, to his great credit, helped the guy back on his feet. He got helped him get identification papers that he needed, which allowed him to get a job. And so to his great credit. But one of the stories that came out of it was before the 2008 draft. And Parcells is debating, does he take Jake Long or Matt Ryan? The quarterback or the tackle of the quarterback, right? And so he asked the homeless guy, he goes, in their conversation, you know, would you take the quarterback or the tackle? And John, the homeless guy, says, oh, you got to take the tackle. Oh. Now, this guy was a very strong opinions. There was no gray area in his answers of anything. And you got to take the tackle. And Parcells said, why is that? And he goes, who's going to protect the quarterback? So I've always thought there's been a Chauncey the Gardner type decision made on that instrumental draft where they took Jake Long, they passed on Matt Ryan because a homeless guy told Bill Parcells.
Right now.
Oh, man.
Should have made him director of player personnel. When
Between Seth Force and Ricky to retire and John picking our tackle.
Right.
You know what I mean?
This him.
Wait, you forced Ricky to retire? There went 5 columns for me a year when he retired.
I didn't force him to retire. I hate to relive this. So I left about 6 weeks before he did, Dave. You know, JT had offered me the job to come start the foundation. This was 2004. And I took the job and I was saying bye to the guys. And I told Ricky that I was leaving. And he was a little disappointed, but happy for me. And he asked me kind of my thought process and the decision making. And so I shared it with him. And he just really seemed to understand what I was saying. He just seemed to connect with it. So we asked him about it. And unfortunately, he connected with it far more than I realized as built here from the tank. But I think there were a lot of things going on in his life. Hold on, let's get back to fucking Bill Parcells.
You know what? Speaking of Bill Parcells,
all that happened to this franchise, Matt Ryan is still trying. The guy's got 57,000 yards, and they're debating whether he's Hall of Fame worthy or not. But look at the frigging career that guy has had. And look, we're excited now for what's going on with the quarterback position here, Ryan. But I'm glad he helped that guy get a job. That's really wonderful. And the guy was selling papers and all those things are good. But should he be making that fucking decision for this team?
Well, I think we might be connecting the two dots a little too far that he made the decision. But it's a great story.
You're an award-winning reporter, Dave Hyde. And if you said it, then that's what he did.
Damn. Well, it is true that right. happened. That story happened. But yeah, you know, one of the things, of course, I've written how many columns on is all the quarterback decisions. And how they've all gone awry, you know.
Yeah.
Let's hope they found a quarterback. That's one of the flaws in the game of football is you need a great quarterback.
Yeah.
You absolutely do. You absolutely do. So, all right, well, we'll shift to another one of my favorites, Juice. let's talk about Nick Saban, another one of my all-time favorites here. So, look, what Nick has done in the college level, you know, it's one of, if not the all-time greats. And again, unfortunately, I think every player other than Zach Thomas who has played for him and been on this show just raves about Nick.
Mm-hmm. But defensive guys.
True. That's a fair point. No, but you know what? Chambers said he empowered him and, you know, and all that stuff. But the thing that he's remembered here for more than anything else, and probably part of the reason why so many people have disdain for Nick, is the famous line of, I'm not going to be the Alabama head coach. What award-winning journalist pulled that out of him, Dave?
Yeah, that was, you know, that was one of the stranger days, okay, because there were rumors flying around, obviously, Alabama, and it'd been going on for days, and I was out there, now, as a columnist, I don't go out there every day, okay, and I was out there this day, I hadn't been out for a couple of days, and I'd seen him tap dancing around the question, here they come again, and there's Nick again tap dancing, and okay, my mindset was he's staying with the Dolphins. Okay, tells you how completely off base was. I talked to a couple people.
Maybe he should have gone out a few more times.
Yeah, yeah. And so he's tap dancing, and I go, well, you're not answering the question. I said, you're not answering the question. He goes, what do you mean? He goes, I think I did. I go, no, you didn't say you're going to stay with the Dolphins. Or he goes, well, then I guess I got to say it. I'm not going to be the Alabama coach. And that, so my mindset was, I thought in a weird way, I'm helping him say what he's trying to say. Okay.
And to be honest,
I was just tired of him tap dancing. Okay. Which should have been the first tip off that he's going.
Right.
Okay. Cause look, if he's going to stay, he extinguishes everything right away. So, but yeah, that led to a, you know, Harvey came up to me, you can't hold him to that answer. And cause he's, and you know, Nick was fascinating. And, you know, one of the great regrets to me, and I think people don't understand, he was a great guy to cover. And I've covered bad guys. I've covered a lot of bad guys. You know, the Cam Camerons, the Joe Philbins, guys who won't give you anything on my side. But Nick Saban, he would come in there, and you'd have to poke him a little. And, you of course, at Alabama, you see the clips of when his anger gets up a little. But he had stories to tell. He'd share philosophies of his life or football. And he tried to be interested. I had no problem. And people say, oh, he was awful. He's awful. He's not awful with the media. That's one of the great misconceptions, I think. And you talk to anybody who covered him with the Dolphins. He was really interesting to cover. Now, that you were never going to become best friends with him, which, hey, that's fine with me. I don't need to go out. But when you want interesting answers or something to somebody to answer some questions, he would do it. Now I thought they were in trouble. He used to do the radio show, over at a restaurant, right? Uh-huh. And he'd have different guests every week and different media people to his credit every week.
Yes,
and
even someone that didn't have the same response that you did.
Is that right? But you could ask him anything. And in fact, I remember I said, Harvey, I'm going to ask him. There were all these defensive backs being signed, and they hadn't signed any, and they didn't have any defensive backs that were proven. I remember, and I said, I'm going to ask him, why aren't they signing him? He goes, yeah, go ahead. He likes, you know, you ask him. So I did, and he answered it, but I'm standing off to the side with his wife, Terry, and she was a live personality, and she goes, where is everybody? And I said, what do you mean? She goes, look at the restaurant. Where is everybody? And I go, you know, the team hadn't won. Team hadn't won anything. They're not going to come out here. This is in a small college town where people are just going to say, oh, we love the Dolphin coach. You gotta put some results out there. So I thought they were in trouble at that point.
Well, you were right.
You were absolutely right.
You're exactly right.
You know, we've talked a lot, Dave, about a lot of different coaches and leaders of this franchise. And, you know, but there's also a great story that we do have a true head man that's been around for a while now, Mr. Stephen Ross. He's one of my favorite owners. I've loved all our owners, man, from the Robbies to Huizenga to Mr. Ross now. But, you know, there's a story about, you know, Mr. Ross and an exchange you had with Brian Billick that you know.
Yeah. So when Steve bought the team, obviously the Dolphins play the Jets every year. And here I'm thinking, how can I get an extra day in New York? Okay, so are you seeing a theme?
Forward, forward thinking, Maddie.
Are you seeing a theme? Hawaii, Jake Scott, New York. So no. I thought I want to go up and I want to meet him in his element and with the related group up in New York where the headquarters are. So I emailed him and he goes, yeah, sure, come on up. I'm here all the time. And I was like, oh, that's great. He's gonna. And Friday night, 5:00. Went into his office and we sat. We probably talked for 2 hours, and it was, you know, he was really open, fascinating, as he's been throughout his time. But one of the stories that came up was when he bought the team, and if you remember, the Dolphins were 0-13 the year before, and the game against Baltimore, and Brian Billick's the coach of Baltimore, and he. What did he do, Seth? He kicked a field goal? And
yeah, I think that's what
he going for the win, yeah.
Okay. He could have gone for the win, right? And said he kicked a field goal because the Dolphins end up winning because of that, you know, long past to Greg Camarillo. So Billick gets fired at the end of the year. Steve Ross takes over the team. Billick takes a job with NFL Networks. Fast forward to the next year, Brian Billick with the NFL Network is knocking on Steve Ross's door for an interview. And Ross, you know, he holds out his hand to shake Steve. He goes, and Ross goes, "You son of a bitch." And I might be exaggerating the language, but that was the idea. And Billick's like, "What? What happened?" He goes, "You cost me $40 million. And he goes, "What? What are you talking about?" And so he explains the end of the Baltimore game, how the Dolphins won. And Wayne Heisenden called him up the next morning and said, "The price just went up $40 million. he said after that win, now if you remember after the win, Heisenden is crying in the locker room, tears of relief that they're not going to go winless that year, that they got one win on the board. But he says he realized how much he enjoys owning the team. So he called up Ross that night and said, price just went up $40 million.
Well, they're two tough businessmen right there.
That's funny. And then Parcells went and talked to John, you know, a couple months later about the quarterback situation. Because we had the first pick in the draft the following year.
That's right in that timeline. You're right.
Yes, it was. All right, well, let's shift to something else here. You know, there's no way we could talk about or let you go, Dave, without – there's one guy we haven't mentioned. You know, we're talking about you covering the Dolphins for this entire time. And Dan Marino, you know, and you've had a really wonderful relationship with Dan. I know how much he respects you. But you're and it seems to be a theme, your post-career relationship with these guys grow even more. You were telling me a really wonderful story that I think just sums up who Dan is in a lot of ways and just kind of sums up the magic of Dan Marino.
Yeah, you know, and Marino really wasn't a good guy to cover. And he'll be the first to say it from the standpoint of he ain't going to give you a good quote. He's not going to be, you know, he was always approachable, which is, you know, rule number one, hopefully, of a friend. So if you got to know him, you could go up and ask him a question or two. But he didn't really like being a headline. He didn't want to be out. He was a great leader. But to your point, so again, I go up to New York and he's on CBS, the football show. And I just want to do a column on, you know, what's Dan Marino's afterlife like on TV and what it's like spending a Sunday with him. He was all for it. Come on up. So I'm standing next to the set where they're, you know, I'm right outside the camera view. And there's Boomer Esiason going through stats and circling things to say and look a little frantic, to be honest with you. You know, as they're counting down, you know, 20 seconds. And there's Dan just sitting there staring at the cameras, very calm and collected. And Boomer looks at me and he goes, "Will you look at that? All he's got to do is be Dan Marino."
That's great.
Dan knew his personnel perfectly, and Boomer is like going crazy. He's got it because he's trying to find the perfect stat, you know. And so it was really interesting to see. And I've always thought that he's just got to be Dan Marino in life.
That's it. And Deuce, you know, I don't know if you've ever heard him say this, but with Ralph and Vinny all the time, he'd say, "Just got to be Dan Marino, and it's a great gig if you can get it."
That's right.
There's only one guy who earned that gig.
That's right.
That is awesome. Well, let me say this, Dave, too. And OJ, I think, feels the same way when I told him that you would agree to be on the show. You know, for the 8 years that I was there, you know, a lot of different people have different approaches to telling these stories and to covering these teams. And I was always impressed that you would really want to get all perspectives when you had the time to do so, you know, after a game's a little bit different. But you really wanted to get all perspectives when you were going to write a column on the team. And I know you would have countless conversations with Harvey. I know a couple times you've told me, "Hey, you going to grab lunch? Let's go across the street. And let me just kind of, not to fish for information, but just to get a perspective that maybe you're, you know, what am I missing here?" So I appreciate that. And I think that's something listeners need to know when they're reading who they're reading, that, you know, the approach you guys take.
Thanks. I appreciate it. I remember you as a PR guy, Seth. I remember being desperate for a column one day and you said, "I got something for you."
Did I pitch something?
Yeah, and you said, "Just a second." You came out with James McKnight,
receiver,
had a card, and which he was more. He wanted to share, and
right?
You being a good PR guy, shared it with me, and I went out and talked to him. It was about Christianity, I believe.
It was about Christianity and overcoming sexual addiction.
That was it. That was it. Overcoming sexual addiction. I knew it wasn't just your normal vanilla Christianity story. It had a real big twist to it. So, you know, back at you, you know, you knew what we were looking for and how to make both sides of it work.
Yeah,
OJ was just a good interview. I remember OJ, you tell the story. You caught, how long was that pass against the University of Miami you caught?
I don't even remember, man. I know I had some good games against them.
That's what I remember. I remember first seeing OJ in the Orange Bowl playing Miami.
Love it.
Big game.
Oh, man, I loved it. And that was crazy in there playing against those guys, man. You know, like you talk about, they were still in the middle of their heyday then. 80s all through the early 90s, they were incredible. So it was that was a big loss for us 2 years in a row playing against the U. Down here in Miami and also, you know, of course, up in Penn State, it was awful. Awful
loss. Sounds like Deuce wanted to show out for Joe the homeless guy or whatever.
That's right. I wanted Joe to pick me. John to pick me.
what I remember Penn State game up there, I forgot about this. Is Michael Barrow, the linebacker for the University of Miami. He played in the pros for a while, and he coached down at UM. He recovered a fumble, and I'm talking to him after the game about the – he goes, yeah, it's a big pileup. It was a big crucial fumble in the game he recovered, and he goes, you know what happened in there?
Yeah.
I feel an arm snaking up my leg, and it grabbed my balls, and I'm screaming, and he goes, ref, he's got my balls. He's got my balls. Yeah. He goes, I wouldn't let go of the football.
Yep, I know the guard that did that.
I know that guy's move. That is too funny. Well, Dave, thank you for taking the time, man. I know it's kind of crazy, crazy days right now trying to cover sports, and there's a lot of questions as to will we even have the football that we want to have. But we're certainly hopeful that we will have football and can't wait to read what you have to say about this year's team and everything else. Thanks for
having me, breaking up my shoulder at home. You know, it's good. It's good to actually talk to people, even if it's our business now has become Zoom. So, but great. Enjoy your guys' podcast. Keep up the good work.
Hey, thanks for diving in, Dave.
You're now diving into the fish tank.
Sitting down with Seth Living, OJ, Juice Man, this is strictly for them true fans, Dolph fans, number one, of course y'all, this ain't no ordinary sports talk, dive up in that fish tank, go get your aqua orange, yeah it's time to dive up in that fish tank, it's only legendary talking when you dive up in that fish tank, rocking with OJ and Seth when we dive up in that fish tank. Okay, this one for them diehards. Celebrate big or cry hard. Leave it all on the field, we gon' try hard. Old school, a new school, mix it in. Feeling like we up close when we listening. Dolphins tales, in Miami is the deep end. We vibing with our favorite players, no secret. We get with Seth and McDuffie, bringing up stories we never heard to the public. Bet we love it, Dolphins fans never budget. We loyal to the team, whether happy or we upset. We be like, what's next? Don't switch the subject. You know it's all about them fans. And if you ready for that water, time to dive in. Don't switch the subject. You know it's all about them fans. And if you down with Dolphins Nation, time to dive in. Don't switch the subject. You know it's all about them fans. You looking at that fish tank, it's time to dive in. Go get your aqua orange. Yeah, it's time to dive up in that fish tank. It's only legendary talking when you dive up in that fish tank. Rockin' with OJ and Seth when you dive up in that fish tank. Dog fans with attitude, we about to dive up in that fish tank.